Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program that the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleadle-Tené First Nation.
You're listening to QualityCast North. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Deanna Danskin.
Today, our topic is one which is very familiar to everyone working in primary care and yet remains complex and difficult to manage, and one where outcomes are often extremely variable. Today, we're talking about the management of patients with chronic pain. Although the standard path to supporting safe use of opiate medications for chronic pain may sound straightforward on paper, an individual's psychological, social, and physical components to their chronic pain generate a complexity which makes this path anything but straightforward for many patients. Here to talk about her improvement work, helping primary care patients with chronic pain navigate their path to recovery, is rural GP, Dr. Shannon Douglas. Hello, Shannon. So glad you could join us today.
Hi, Cher. Thank you for having me. Hi, Deanna.
Hi, and welcome. So before we turn to your actual QI project, we were hoping you could tell us a little bit about your background and about yourself, sort of where you grew up and your journey into medicine, and maybe a little bit about the community where you currently practice.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Shannon Douglas. I'm a family physician. I currently live in Vanderhoof, which is in the Saikas First Nations traditional territory. And I've lived in this area for over 20 years now. My journey into medicine came not far from where I'm currently sitting. I actually went to high school in Vanderhoof, graduated from high school in Fort St. James, pursued post-secondary education first at UVic, and then completed my medical training at UBC. I've worked in Fraser Lake now for about 20 years. And Fraser Lake is a small community on Highway 16. It's sitting within the traditional territories of the Stellaton and Nodlewitten peoples. And the health center there is a small diagnostic and treatment center, and it serves a population of about 2,000 to 3,000 people.
Great. And can you tell us a little bit about the team of people that work with you in your practice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Fraser Lake Community Health Center has a number of different physicians, nurse practitioners. We have a number of primary care nurses, a mental health clinician, social work, and a number of different visiting interprofessional team members.
So maybe turning to the quality improvement work now, how did you first identify the management of chronic pain as an area in your practice that needed improvement?
Yeah, so this really came out of the opiate crisis back in 2016, 2017, where it became really apparent that physicians and providers who were prescribing opiates were feeding into the problem. Around that time, we also had a significant physician manpower challenge in Fraser Lake, and there was a period of time in which I was the only physician remaining. And part of my anxiety and our team's anxiety around that time was how we were going to support all of our kind of clients who had chronic pain, who were using opiate medications, to be able to access their medication safely and in a timely way. So that's really what kind of prompted this piece of work.
So moving on to the project itself, what did your improvement project actually involve, and what did you aim to achieve?
This project was really well informed, I think in part because of the public health crisis and just of all the information and the guidelines that were coming out to really support providers in providing chronic pain patients with opiate medications in the safest way possible. Around that time, the practice support program, had a great session. And so there were lots of opportunities to learn more about the different tools and resources. And up until that time, we really had not been using many of those tools. And so the opportunity really was to take a look at our current practice, and then take a look at what else we would need in order to be able to meet some more of the recommendations for safe prescribing. As I said, based on the college guidelines and also using the tools kind of identified by the practice support program.
And so what did your improvement project actually involve, and what did you aim to achieve?
Our improvement project really looked to redefine and change the way that we supported patients with chronic pain who were using opiate medications. And there were a number of kind of steps to this. First of all was identifying who those patients were. So not all of our patients had chronic pain as a condition in their health conditions list in the EMR. So the first piece was really to identify those patients, to kind of work to manage that part of our panel a little bit better so that we had an accurate diagnosis, so that the medications that they were using were coded in searchable formats and accurate to their current use. And so that was like the big first piece, was just really understanding kind of the scope of who had chronic pain in our community, who was using opiate medications, and what exactly were they using. So that would be step one. Yeah.
Okay. And then elaborating further, how did the project evolve from that point and onwards?
Once we had identified the patients within the community who were using opiate medications to help manage their chronic pain, we looked at what the current recommendations were in terms of the support structures to manage their medication safely. So this started with, a contract to ensure that both patients and providers were committed to being in a relationship, a professional relationship for the sake of those medications. So effectively, the provider would be there for the patients, and the patients would come to that one provider for prescriptions. They understood that they were not to go to alternative providers or the emergency department for routine opiate prescriptions for their chronic pain. So we started with that. Then we expanded it along the practice support program recommendations to look at the different screening tools and other metrics that could be collected and would support safe use of the prescription medications. One thing we recognized early on was that this wasn't a one-person show, and we really needed to look at how we could leverage the team to be able to support patients. We were quite fortunate at the time. We had a licensed practical nurse who was very engaged and willing to kind of lend their support to that. And we created a new pathway for patients to receive their prescriptions. We had a block of time set aside for them. They would be booked in with our LPN first, and she would go through a number of different screening questions with them. We would take a look at their medication history to make sure that they were taking the medications as prescribed. And then after they had seen our LPN, they would then come to the family physician's office and we would see them there. The real value in this was that we had already determined they had chronic pain. We already knew what medications they were on. We had already taken a look at their prescriptions to make sure that they weren't in too early and they were taking them appropriately. If there was a urine drug screen needed, that would have already been requested and done. And we would have completed some of the recommended screenings, such as the PHQ-9, the GAD-7, or the pain inventory. We've also had another clinical touch point for that patient to really understand, you know, how they were managing with their chronic pain, and were there any other supports needed, such as a referral perhaps to social work, mental health, occupational therapy, or someone else from the interprofessional team who might be able to help them with issues they might be facing.
And so once you and your team had started this process of changing the pathway and beginning this work, did you encounter any challenges or difficulties? And if so, how did you overcome these?
I think we did have some challenges. I don't think our interprofessional team had ever worked together quite like this before. We work together on complex patients all the time, but we really hadn't worked together on, you know, this kind of scenario where we have a patient with complex needs, but, you know, they're not really acutely unwell. And this is really a prescription renewal opportunity. And we took it from being a prescription renewal and we changed it into a care episode where we really kind of actively put some supports in for those patients. We had never worked together that way as a team. And so it was a little bit of a challenge, kind of changing folks' mindsets and getting some engagement to give this a try. Once we started, I don't think no one wanted to go back. It was extremely successful, but it was a little bit challenging kind of organizing everyone's time right at the get-go. The other challenge we had was, you know, some providers really felt that these clients were at very high risk and they were very potentially vulnerable. And so it was difficult for them to envision sharing their care with the interprofessional team. So again, that just took a little bit of support and conversation. And once we all kind of understood kind of how we could work together and how even, you know, with our LPN and our interprofessional team, you know, patients would have them as a contact, even if us as providers were not available. And that became a really important resource for patients. So anyways, I think just kind of working through the process really smoothed out some of the reservations around it. Not too surprisingly, patients quite loved it. You know, and I hadn't realized, I think prior to that, how difficult it was for patients to get their medications. They were routinely either calling in too early or too late. If they were too early, someone might think they were drug seeking and chastise them for coming in too early. If they came in too late, they were going through withdrawal. So offering a guaranteed appointment at a fixed time that they could put into their schedule was a huge relief for them. And yeah, they felt very, very well supported just knowing. I think we had originally picked Thursday morning and eventually that got moved to Wednesday morning as the community shifted. But for clients to know that they had a guaranteed appointment, they can come in and get their prescription, that was a huge relief for them.
And so I think I know the answer to this question, but and you've already alluded to this, but was the project therefore ultimately considered a success? I think the answer is yes. But how did you measure that success, can I ask?
The project was very successful. We initially measured it not so much by how many people we were serving, but by how many people were actively engaged with their care plan. Because every time a client would come in, we would update and engage with their care plan. And so we were able to track that in our EMR. And so that's how we initially measured success. So of these clients coming in, how many of them have an active care plan, have been seen, you know, have had their PharmaNet searches done, have completed a urine drug screen, have completed the screening for either depression, anxiety, or their pain within the previous 6 months. And very quickly, we kind of met those metrics of success. Some of the pieces that I didn't expect to be so successful was that, unlike before, where we had been talking about how opiates were dangerous medications and people shouldn't use too many of them, and we needed to be really careful. Unlike before, where we talked about that at almost every appointment with patients, very, very few patients prior to this ever discontinued their opiate medications. By bringing in the interprofessional team, it allowed us to change our conversations. So a patient might come in for their chronic pain renewal, and as a clinician, you might say, wow, your PHQ-9 is a little bit high. Your medication sometimes can lead to depression. Do you think that might be a problem for you? And typically, you know, a patient would say, no, I don't think that's a problem. But down the road, those little kernels, they sit and people think about them. And you wouldn't be surprised. You know, I was actually shocked. A few months later, patients would come back and, you know, doc, we talked last time about, you know, depression, and maybe that is a problem for me. I think I need to come off of these medications. And the real success was that we went from having a fully booked clinic for the clients and patients in Fraser Lake to having open appointments all the time. We almost don't need our service anymore. So that was the real benefit. I don't think it was all just because of the quality improvement work. I think a lot of the public health initiatives and the information around the dangers around opiates, like, that was highly supportive. It all kind of came together at the same time as the public awareness of the dangers around opiates was increasing as well. Still, this bringing patients together with the interprofessional team allowed us to get through this time of significant understaffing, you know, with having zero patients seen through the ER for their prescription, and actually allowed us to support patients to, of their own, not even their own volition, they chose to stop their chronic opiate medications for their pain.
So I think you've already discussed some of the key factors that led to the success around, you know, the work of the team and the additional public health measures that are concurrently going on. But can you think of any other key factors that led to the success of this project?
I think one of the key factors that was really supportive of kind of changing the way we practiced was really self-reflection. It was looking back at the way that we've worked for years, at the way that we were taught to work, and figuring out and deciding, like, what parts of this are useful for me and what parts are not. And one of the things that, you know, just as an example, when I was training, it was common for people to be prescribed opiate medications for chronic pain. And that was pretty common and very standard. It was also quite common for patients to come in and be almost writhing in the chair when they came in for their prescription. And it was like you wouldn't believe them that they had chronic pain unless they showed you how much pain they had. And as a young provider, I would be a little bit frustrated by this, but, you know, okay, this is just the way it is. With this piece of work, you know, I decided this needs to change. You know, chronic pain medication, it's important, but it should allow people to sit down and talk to their doctor. They shouldn't be riding in a chair. That's not normal at all. And there should be no expectation that patients look like they're in pain. In fact, if the pain medication's working, they shouldn't look like they're in pain at all. They should actually be more functional than they would be otherwise. And that took a big shift for me. to, you know, not expect people to show me their pain. And that made a big difference. You know, if a client comes in and they just don't trust that their doctor's going to give them the prescription, you know, if they don't look like they're in enough pain, maybe I'm going to talk to them about stopping it. So they have to show you their pain, you know, and then you get in this push me, pull me, where you know that they don't need to ride. Like, you know, you saw them in the supermarket the other day and they looked fine. So why are they riding here in the office with you? And it was a very uncomfortable, and I think it was uncomfortable for the provider and for the patients as well. And really with reflection, I came to realize I had to get out of my own way and I needed to reset the expectations for what the pain medication could do. And it felt really awkward the first few times where we've had a relationship with this patient where they have literally, you know, shuffled in their chair and told me how bad their back was for like 5 years, every month for 5 years. And to tell them that, wow, you know, I don't know if your medication's working. My expectation is that taking morphine 30 milligrams twice a day, you should be able to sit in the chair and have a conversation with me. Like, that's how I would know that the pain medication was working. Wow, that changed immediately. All of the pain behavior went away as soon as I stopped expecting it as a prerequisite for providing the prescription. So in my own mind, I had to move away from, I'm providing this prescription because this patient looks like they're in pain, to I'm providing this prescription because the patient says they're in pain and functions far better with pain medication. And I had to get on my own way for that. That took a lot of soul searching on my part. And it felt wrong. It felt wrong to not be challenging patients who didn't appear like they were in pain, especially with all the challenges we were having with opiates, and it was up in the news and people were overdosing and it was really anxiety provoking. But in the end, when I made that transition and all of us as a team kind of made that transition, we were able to support the patients to use medications far more safely and in fact be able to come off the medications. Whereas beforehand, I think we spent all of our time kind of trying to justify for ourselves we were prescribing. Patients spent all their time trying to access the medication that they needed, that none of us actually kind of sat down and had an honest conversation about what the medication could do, what it couldn't do, what other barriers they might be facing, and how else we might support them other than with pain medication.
So lots of advice here, but I'm wondering if you could package it into sort of, if there were a provider out there that wanted to implement a similar project, what piece of advice would you give them to get started?
I think if I were talking to a newer provider, I would advise them that the way they've been trained and the way they're currently providing care can change. And if it's working for them and working for patients, they probably don't need to change it. But if it's not working for them and it's not working for patients, there may be an opportunity to sit back and really think about how you might be able to change the process to make it work better, both for you and for the patient. I would also kind of suggest to them that this doesn't need to be just one person taking on a challenge. A lot of our patients with chronic disease are incredibly complex, and they really benefit from the support of the primary care nurse and the primary care team. So to not hesitate to reach out, and they might be surprised at how much support bringing other providers into the care team can really, really provide for that patient. And in their journey, it really complements the work that we do.
Yeah, so you've mentioned that it, you know, there are some changes that are difficult to overcome around new ways of utilizing the team, new ways of changing your own approach to practice. But if you think about quality improvement in general, do you think that there are any specific things that prevent physicians in general from engaging in QA projects? And what can we do to change the culture to one that is more supportive of physician-led QI?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of work that's already being done to really support physician QI. One of the big gaps early on was knowledge. And that has been systemically and systematically kind of addressed through the PQI kind of training programs and other kind of pathways for physicians to be able to get education and to be able to develop their skills to be effective in quality improvement pieces. So I think the environment is changing and has been changing for some time.
Now, I understand you actually have another role as well as being a rural primary care physician, and that's as a Northern Health Medical Director for the rural sites in the Northern Interior in Northern Health. And I wonder if I could ask you, not wearing this other hat of yours, how do you think rural physicians in particular can work more closely with their clinic managers or the hospital administrators or the health authority to overcome some of these barriers and really begin to develop that perspective mindset change? Because very often we get tunnel vision into what we're doing day by day, week by week, year by year, after seeking particular goals. And as you've described, actually, all it takes is perhaps a perspective shift, a simple mental change to fundamentally change the quality of the care that we provide. Do you have any thoughts or any ideas about how we can together bring ourselves to the point of developing those perspective changes and then implementing quality improvement on that basis?
I think there's a great deal of expertise and knowledge in a lot of our rural teams. It sits with different members, sometimes within the physician cohort, sometimes within the nurse practitioners or other kind of medical staff, and sometimes within, you know, other staff such as our nurses. I think whenever we connect and we have conversations around challenges that we're facing to meet different patient needs, opportunities will come up and there will be conversations that take place that can shift the way we think about working together. So I do think those opportunities to reflect, to understand some of the challenges, and to be able to look at the different challenges from different perspectives is really valuable. Like in terms of working with like Northern Health staff, one of the real enablers is working with our PSP coaches who help us really understand our panels and identify different areas that we might want to work on or work to improve. And those can be a really good starting spot.
Well, thank you for that. And we're nearing the end of the interview, and it pains me to pull away from the subject of quality improvement because we were having such a great time there. But as we approach the end of the interview, we do have one more question for you. And it's actually one that we ask all our guests. And that is, what is it that you specifically like about living and working in Northern BC? And you said at the very beginning of the interview that this is where you came from. This is home for you. I just wonder whether you can just expound on that really and say what it is about living and working in the North that you find so attractive.
Living and working in the North was my goal before I left home to go away to school. So I'm definitely a northern girl. My family was a dog sledding family, so I spent numerous miles behind a dog team before I ever graduated from high school. And the opportunity to come back and practice an environment that is so connected to the wild and nature was really appealing. I also love working with people from a diversity of different backgrounds and socioeconomic kind of environments. And in a rural community, you really have an opportunity to transect different groups and to be able to serve a broad spectrum of the population. And like my experience kind of before medicine, but even more so afterwards, you have the opportunity to be inspired by people and to be a part of a community where you can give to your community, not just with medicine, but also of your person, and you can get back from your community. And that offers just a tremendous amount of value.
Well, that's a wonderful response, and it's really illuminating and a privilege to hear that. And so on that note, I think we can draw the interview to a close, and just remains for me to thank you, Shannon, for joining us today and going through your project, and some of your insights have been really illuminating, and that's been wonderful. So the music, closing music is coming, and that means we're at the end. So thank you again for joining us today. And as a token of our appreciation, Shannon, one of our exclusive Quality Cast North coffee mugs will be on its way to you shortly. But if you, the listener, would like to know more about today's guest and her project, you can find this information with the show notes on our podcast website, where you can also find links to our other episodes. And if you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. But until next time, I'm Cher Chewy.
Deanna Danskin.
And this is Quality Cast North. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy, and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. Quality Cast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clayclaytonay First Nation. Check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.